Hi, everyone, and welcome to Utility Safety In-Depth, where we take a deeper dive into topics recently covered in Incident Prevention Magazine. I'm Kate Wade, the editor of Incident Prevention, and your host for this podcast. In this episode, I sit down with John Fisher, who is the director of corporate EHS and environmental strategy for Duke Energy. He wrote a feature article titled ESG, Health and Safety Obstacle or Opportunity, for the February-March issue of Incident Prevention. To give you just a quick backstory, until John reached out to me several months ago, I wasn't super familiar with the concept of ESG, and I suspected I wasn't the only one. So after reviewing John's article and doing some additional research, I learned that ESG, which stands for environmental, social responsibilities and factors, and governance, has quite a lot of overlap with health and safety in the utility environment. So I asked John if he'd be willing to be a guest on the podcast to discuss more about ESG, and he kindly agreed. So now, without further ado, I'd like to welcome you to the show, John. Thanks so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kate. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, so before we jump right into things, can we learn a little bit more about your professional background and what led you to your current position at Duke?
Sure. So, you know, my career path is definitely a scattered plot. It's certainly not a straight line. So my undergrad degree is actually in environmental. And so I had this dream I was going to be a marine biologist. And then they showed me the pay of $18,000. And I was like, right. And so I said, okay, well, what do I like to do? I like being outside. I like doing environmental stuff. And so that led me to a degree, you know, in environmental science, kind of with specialization in toxic substances. So doing a lot of toxicology when I first got started. And so I did that for a couple of years in environmental remediation at a construction firm, worked for some state government, and eventually made my way into consulting. And so when I was a consultant, we were a really small firm. And so some of our contracts, our environmental contracts, had a safety component to it. And so I was kind of, I've always been interested in safety, but just wasn't a focus on my career at that time. And so started learning more and more about safety and really enjoyed the fact that you have a people component to safety. Sometimes in the environmental space, there's, you know, it's very black and white. Here's the number. You're either above it or below it, and that's either good or bad, right? And with safety, it's such more, there's so many more dynamics to having a relationship with somebody, understanding them, really being able to plug in and pour into them as a person, not just kind of a number on a spreadsheet. So I got asked to do some of that, really, really liked it, started down that path. And so when I left California to come back to Michigan, I started working in energy. So I'd done some consulting in energy, but mostly small, simple cycle CTs. And then I moved to a larger generating fleet in Michigan. And then so safety kind of started in that, I'd say, you know, early to mid 2000s for me. And I haven't really looked back. And so I've worked for a variety, both commercial and regulated, in San Diego, in Boston, in Detroit, and St. Louis. I found myself at Duke. I was doing safety and occupational health for Duke for a while. And then a few years ago, they asked me, hey, you have this background of environmental. We didn't know this. You want to do some environmental stuff. And so they assigned me some environmental stuff, and that continues to grow. So right now I'm kind of doing both. But at the end of the day, my path didn't start in safety and it didn't start in energy, but I found myself, you know, 25 years later, here I am.
Well, awesome. I mean, that's quite a journey you've had, right? Well, so the thing that we're talking about today and what you wrote about in your article for our most recent issue was about this concept called ESG. And it's not something I'm super familiar with. I've heard it before. And so I'm curious, if you had to give somebody like a 30-second elevator pitch kind of thing about ESG, how would you describe it to them? What would you say?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there's a lot of social stigma around ESG, and it's in the news a lot. And that can be good and bad. Certainly bringing some attention to it is good. But, you know, because it's misunderstood, I think that the attention that it gets is not always unbiased. And so my 30-second speech to someone would be, you know, ESG is really about being recognized for the stewardship and the principles that you probably already have in place. And so it brings structure and recognition to a lot of activities that your company already has probably ongoing, but it's never been identified in special letters or categories or things like that. And so it's this concept around making the workplace better than what it is currently and being on that journey, both from a community perspective, a worker perspective, and an environmental perspective.
Well, so one of the words that keeps coming up for me is this sustainability kind of thing. And so one of the first things that you mentioned in your article is this statistic that sort of has to do with sustainability. And the quote is, according to research from the WineRev Group, in publicly held U.S. companies, the position described as chief sustainability officer has grown from 29 such officers in 2011 to 183 in 2023. These are roles that typically sit in the C-suite of a company and have direct strategic decision-making responsibilities, end quote. So why do you think that there has been such an increase in this number of sustainability officers in such a, a relatively short period of time?
Yeah, I think that the fact that communities and investors are asking and demanding for more out of especially publicly traded companies and even more so just companies in general, that there's been an increased emphasis because, again, a lot of the things have been going on, not consistently across the board, but there hasn't been a lot of attention. And so what that sustainability, ESG, whatever we want to call it, because the name seems to change sometimes, is really this idea around giving back to the community, being a stewardship in the communities that you operate in, making sure that your environmental impact is very low. And in the health and safety realm, it's really treating employees as almost like family members, right? Making sure you're providing them with the tools and equipment, processes, so that they're not going to get injured on the job, or the likelihood goes down, that they're equipped to be successful. And so I think that's, so without a direct focus, I think of it sometimes, when we don't have attention at that executive level, things tend to get lost. And so this idea of bringing a kind of C-suite member, a chief sustainability officer, a chief philanthropy officer, that brings attention, not only at the company level, but then at the investor level. Now there's someone that you can dialogue with at an investor day or if you're having conversations and get the company strategy. So whereas used to be you might have competition for megawatts or you have competition for assets, now in utility space, you're looking at these major utilities, whether it's Duke or Dominion or Entergy, and you're looking at their impact ESG sustainability reports and comparing them. Investors are using that as a tool to decide where they would like to invest.
Can people use it as like benchmarking to kind of look at what other companies are doing too?
They do. And so they use it as benchmarking. Internally, we have benchmarks that we look at as part of our impact report or our sustainability report. I think we've renamed that the impact report now. But we are constantly looking at that because you may find a best practice at another utility and it's the greater good between the two as you're learning from each other versus this competition. So similar in health and safety, when you look at how we benchmark as safety professionals, we typically will share everything. Now, if we are in a competitive marketplace where, Pepsi's benchmarking with Coke, they're not sharing their ingredients, right? Because that's a competition. But in safety, sustainability, ESG space, we're trying to get better because all of it results in a net positive, whether it's to the employee or the planet or the company.
Well, so let's talk a little bit more in depth about each of the three components of ESG. Can you kind of give us an overview of each one? And talk about why more utilities and utility investors are focusing or kind of should be focusing on these non-financial factors.
Yeah, and I think that, I would probably start with the environmental component. You have a lot of folks keyed in. There's an SEC rule forthcoming or Security and Exchange Commission rule, which typically regulates the financial sector. And now they're in uncharted territory because they're looking at greenhouse gas emissions from your process. So on your 10K, which is, again, typically your finance, your EBITDA, your kind of earnings, profits, losses, those kind of things, Now you're actually going to be required to put in greenhouse gas emissions from your processes on your 10K. So the energy, again, when we were talking about the C-suite, that has really ramped up. So now I'm actually reporting on my greenhouse gases, just like I'm reporting on my profit and loss. And so that E section, greenhouse gas is a core component. There's scope one, scope two, scope three. Different scopes mean different things from the energy industry. Scope one is your generating asset emissions. Scope two is the power that you might buy from the grid. Scope three is everything else, things that you buy, how sustainable maybe your cover-up is made, how sustainable the equipment that you're purchasing, the buildings that you build, what's their sustainability process, and that becomes part of your roadmap. So you're getting pressure dialed up on you to get suppliers that are having sustainable business. So it's kind of a game of connect the dots. Their sustainability affects yours. So I think greenhouse is one.
I'm curious real quickly, something just popped into my brain. And, you know, I think we're talking mostly about investor-owned utilities. But I'm curious also, and I don't know if this is the right time to talk about it, but how do these components trickle down into the contractors who do a lot of work for the investor owns? And, you know, is there a connection there?
Great. That's a great question. And so because we are being ratcheted down, right, in terms of our sustainability and the ESG footprint, our suppliers, is like in the example of a scope three emission, their emissions become our emissions by default. And so we're going to be looking for those companies that have very good or excellent sustainability records in order for us to do business with them. Because so now it's like a qualifier. So if you think about from a safety perspective, we might be looking at TRIR or DART rates or SIF rates or things like that to gauge somebody's safety record as they're coming into our book of business. In sustainability space, they're going to be looking at what that contractor's sustainability, their GHG footprint or their environmental footprint or their governance around their safety processes or how they're hiring people and is there equity in how they hire people. And they need to get a certain criteria met even to do business with an investor. And so it's a trickle effect. Okay, kind of it goes, we have expectations and then those expectations trickle through the supply chain.
Awesome. Yeah, that is a great answer. Well, so did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about in terms of environmental, or did you want to move on to the social kind of factors?
Well, here's what I would say about environmental, because I think there's a role in safety and environmental. We can come back to it. But, so when you think about environmental components, think of air, water, waste. Air being greenhouse gas, waste being that we need to reduce the waste that we're producing. So whether that's waste from industrial processes, or we get a shipment of solar panels in and they're all broken. Well, we don't want to just throw those away. We got to find a recycling process for that because that counts against us. We want to reduce our waste footprint. Biodiversity, when we're doing land clearing. So if we have contractors that are doing land clearing activities for solar fields, you know, how they manage those land clearing activities and the biodiversity and endangered species components of that, that's big for us. And so they're going to have to prove to us, what is your plan on managing that if you're in an area where there might be an endangered species or you're clear cutting in a greenfield area where, you know, that it's not an industrial development. And then the last one is really around water consumption. So for the people that working at the plants and you have intakes for cooling, we're going to be looking at, is there an opportunity to decrease that water consumption, pull less out of the ocean, pull less out of the cooling lake, pull less out of those water bodies that we use to operate those units. And so, I mean, that's really air, water, or waste is how I think about, you know, the environmental.
Yeah, that's a lot to think about just in those three things. Well, so let's talk about the social for a second, because I think that one of the ones that's part of the social is like mental health of your of the people that you employ and things like that, which I personally think is super interesting and super important. Do you want to talk a little bit more about those social responsibilities?
Yeah, I think when, you know, this is the one that probably has the closest tie to the health and safety profession. And so when I think about our social responsibility, it's really the responsibility of the person, right? So we should have an environment and a workplace where we're not doing irreparable harm or really any harm to the employees that we have in our business. And so, you know, a lot of energy lately has been in mental health. The problems have always been there, but again, they're just now getting the attention, or at least that's ratcheting up. I think, you know, personally, I need to probably do a little bit more. But what I would say is that, you know, as we begin to build that momentum, now we're looking at the worker in a holistic form. We're not looking at a trade. We're not looking at a job. We're actually looking at John, the worker, coming in. What might he be bringing in? What might be his mental stressors? What might be his physical shape? What might be his community background? What might be his ethnicity? And what is his experiences in that? Or are we affording that opportunity to him? You know, so we're looking at John, the person, not John, the cog in the wheel, to go do the work task. And I think that that's a pretty big pivot, because as we explore the mental health component, that a lot of that is starting to land that wellness is really the H part of health and safety, right? And so, you know, we don't spend, H used to be traditionally industrial hygiene, whereas what chemicals may I be exposing the workers to, and that was really the H. Well, the H has kind of had an M added to it, and now we're looking at the MH, mental health of the employee as they're doing work. And if you think about it, it makes complete sense, right? If you're not prepared, you might be going through a tough time at home. You might have just had a cancer diagnosis. Is that really who you want to go out and manage your 16.2 kV line isolation today? Probably not. And so what are those things that you're identifying, you're equipping, and you have exit ramps in the event that, so you're not putting people in a situation that they can't manage? And that's really that social component. That's all that mental health, all that wellness that's in there. Because, you know, on the E, like the environmental justice side of the social component, you're looking at your impact to communities, right? So you may have, you know, increased ambient pollution through air stacks. You may be have pollution from a discharge canal. How is that negatively impacting the community as a person? Like, so because I live next to this, I am absorbing X amount of hazards, right? Mm-hmm. And so that bleeds over into that health and safety component of what are we exposing our workers to? Are they equipped to do the job? What's the well-being? And that really is built into that social piece of the ESG.
Very cool. Well, what about the governance portion of things? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think the governance, you know, for those of you that kind of follow the news, the governance really came into focus in risk assessment space, both, you know, we think of it as risk, health and safety risk, but in financial risk, when the Silicon Valley Bank collapsed, what they found was they really didn't have governance and structure around their asset management. And so the bank was, you know, not set up to be successful when it was challenged with our current inflationary markets. And so when you think about the governance in health and safety space, I think about ISO, OHS 18001. What are those processes? EHS MS, what's your management system for your health and safety practices and your environmental practices? And so the idea around governance is, where is it written down what you actually do? Like, how are you managing your processes? So when you say you're going to go do grounding, where is the document that I can see what you're actually going to go do? When you're going to do INI, where is that document that says what you're going to do? And so governance in the space of the 50,000 foot view of ESG was really geared more towards like executive structures, but it's the concept of it, you know, what we get asked is around like, where are your procedures for safety? Where are your procedures for environmental? And how are you equipping your worker to be successful so that if you have a deviation from this process, that it can be identified? And so, you know, safety professionals will know this as a classic EHSMS. How do you do it? What's your corrective actions? And when you have a gap, how do you solve? How do you communicate those corrective actions? And how do you have provisions? It's almost like a plan, do, check, act cycle built into everything that you do. And so someone were say, hey, what's your 5-second speech on governance? It's plan, do, check, act. And so it really is around kind of adjusting those. When you learn things, you adjust your governance to reflect that.
Well, and it sort of aligns with that sustainability work too, it sounds like, where, you know, if you have all your procedures and everything in one area where they can be accessed, even if somebody's not around or available, you can still find that information, which I think is important in terms of sustainability. If you lose people, have turnover, et cetera. Well, so, you know, most of the people that are listening to this podcast work in health and safety. So what are some ways that they can leverage this growing focus on ESG in their own organizations?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And hopefully for those that have read the article or maybe you haven't, my approach to that was that I've read a lot of different articles. I've listened to a lot of different presentations, but I've never really seen a health and safety component to those presentations. It's usually heavily focused on the environmental or the social, but it seems to exclude really kind of the day-to-day blocking and tackling around health and safety. And so we've talked about some of those pieces. I think that if you are a safety professional in the field, that there's an opportunity here because of the increased resource, capital funding, et cetera, and ESG. So if an investor is telling a utility or any private company, because it's not limited to utilities, you know, whether it's Pepsi or Coke or, you know, Eli Lilly, everybody's doing sustainability because they're feeling that same kind of calling and pressure. And so as you're looking at the health and safety pieces, if you know you have these resources, and I think I wrote in the article something about, you know, no one's ever had a gluttony of resources and said, oh my gosh, it's got resources, please stop. I haven't had that happen to me. And so, you know, here you've got this rocket ship coming. Why not learn some of these pieces so that when you are making a presentation, hey, we need additional PPE. Hey, I would like to work with manufacturer A to put an interconnect in our fall protection device, right? Where it would automatically, it wouldn't work unless an individual was clipped in, right? Those pieces, those conversations go a lot better when you couch them in the form of, hey, you know, we really need to take care of our worker. You know, our social score on the ESG front is not very good, or in our sustainability front is not very good. And we need to take a look at the worker as a well-being holistic component. And this PPE will allow us to take people from the job to home without interruption. And so instead of having these events that we're having, this eliminates any failure mode that we would have in this process. So yes, it costs X, but we have Y money from our sustainability efforts that I would like to use for this, right? And so I think, you know, in the health and safety realm, hazardous chemicals is another one. You know, many of us have third-partied all of our chemical inventories. But for those of you that get tasked with getting SDS sheets or doing chemical inventory still, wouldn't it be great if you were using substances that didn't have those chemical properties? Thus, you don't have to count them. Thus, all of a sudden, that 3 hours you're spending right now every month on chemical inventory goes away because it's not a listed substance. And so we're replacing it with an alternative that hopefully is, you know, certainly, you know, the operational component and making sure it works. But the idea is that now I don't have to do that 3 hours of work because in an environmental impact, I have used my ESG concepts to get rid of this chemical to make it so that I don't have to do hazardous waste inventory or hazardous material inventory. And so I think this idea, understanding these pieces, again, mental health, we've talked about. What a great opportunity for us to, if there's any of those wellness programs, if there's any of those things that we are missing funding for, mental health, as this becomes more and more prevalent, we need workers that are arriving at the job site, clear mind, clear head. And we know that that's not happening. So how do we put processes using the S component of ESG to equip our supervisors, ourselves, to identify those issues so we're not putting people in a situation where it could be error likely or error prone because mentally they're not there. And so I think really understanding these things, you know, if you were interested in EHSMS or you're trying to get funding for that or you want to redo yours, what a great opportunity to use a governance component of ESG to say, hey, we're looking for, I need some money. We're going to bring in a consultant or I'm going to hire this guy because I want them to look at our EHSMS, audit it, and come up with some ideas. What you'll find is if you have all of these C-suite executives, is that there's likely some funding in your sustainability bucket. And that is not typically a place I had gone in the past. Hey, I need new PPE. Let me go talk with my sustainability folks. But now it is a conversation you can have because that focus is really.
Well, so here's the big question, you know, for people who are still learning about this topic or who still kind of find it nebulous, like where do they go to learn about how to more about what ESG is, how to implement it. You know, are there classes? Are there books? Are there other organizations they can reach out to? Like what kind of help is there out there for people?
Yeah, I think so. Most of our kind of in health and safety conferences. So if I think about like whether it's the IP conference, whether it's the ASSP conference and, you know, pick your soup du jour on that one. There's going to be a track in there, at least one class about either sustainability or ESG, I can guarantee it. And so if you're attending those, you know, that's an opportunity for you to kind of sit in there. Again, caution that I'd have is the ones that I have listened to don't have as much of a health and safety focus as I'd like to see, but I think that that's getting better. So that's opportunity number one. Opportunity number two is lots of free webinars out there. You probably just go into Google and type in free ESG webinar, free sustainability webinar. Again, you might have light on the health and safety, but you'll at least get kind of the baseline 101 sustainability ESG component. And then really the third thing, which has been really, really helpful in my career, is we are, you know, when I think about health and safety, we're like a group of servant leaders. We all just help each other. We like to help each other. We like to help people. No one is in here because we thought we were going to get rich and retire. And so, you know, the idea is that you like to do that. Where are those benchmarks? So I know for myself, I think I have relationships with every other major utility in the United States at this point. And that has grown organically. Didn't start because, you know, we all got together in a room and introduced ourselves, but you have these questions. And so if you're doing work in California and maybe you work for utility A, there's two other ones down there. You say, hey, utility B, what are you guys doing in sustainability? Are you spending any time in safety? Oh yeah, we are. We're not, you know, and if that doesn't work, then maybe you got one up in Washington, you got one up in, you know, Arizona, you got some out in Nevada. So you've got this utility space. Now, the other thing I would encourage, though, is that there you will probably learn as much or more getting outside of utilities. So sometimes our ideas are kind of like dominoes. One of us decides to do it, and then like all 20 of us, 50 of us decide to do it. And so there's not a ton of diversity of thought there. But when you get out and you start asking, like, what's oil and gas doing? You know, what's manufacturing doing? What's pharma doing? That you're going to learn even more. And although their challenges are a little different, they're not pushing electrons on a grid, you will find that what they do have may apply to what you're doing. It's no different than when an individual has an event, maybe pole climbing. There's other things that industries have and fall protection that will help prevent that from happening, even though that's not a utility. Telecom is one that comes to example almost immediately. Similar type of work, different industry.
Well, so I think we've covered a lot of good stuff here today, John, and I hope our conversation has helped some people learn more about this topic, which I think is going to be increasingly important over time. I just wanted to ask, before we close things out, if there's anything else that you want to mention to our listeners about the topic.
Yeah, I mean, for me, and maybe it's just me, I hope it's not, it you got to be curious. You ask questions. If you don't ask a question, the answer is always no. I can't remember who told me that, but if you don't ask, the answer is always no. And so if you have an interest in this, or you're struggling to get, you know, budget for safety, or you're struggling to get different things, here is an opportunity. And that's really why I titled it Opportunity or Obstacle, because a lot of this stuff is going to come into health and safety realm. And I firmly believe, similar to how things just kind of show up at our doorstep. And so here's the time where you can learn it before it gets there as a responsibility. And so, you know, ask questions. Really be curious. That's like a theme that I seem to be attracted to now, is this: be curious, ask questions. If you don't know, someone else does. And so, you know, for me, you know, and certainly there's good resources, whether it's IP or other opportunities. I think that there's materials out there, but if you don't look, you won't learn.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, John. I really appreciated having this opportunity. As a reminder to our listeners, John's article on ESG is now available in the February-March issue of Incident Prevention, which can be accessed online at incident-prevention.com. Until next time, stay safe and be well.
The views, information, and opinions expressed during this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Utility Business Media and its employees. It is strongly recommended that you discuss any actions or policy changes with your company management prior to implementation.